been moving all around the Taipei area.
Oh, this always feels good.
It's 5:30 in the afternoon here in Kathmandu, Nepal.
Okay, just a few hundred steps to go, and I'm at the top of the platform here of Swayam Bhunath, the monkey temple.
I was drinking a mixture of beer, a rice wine, and I am really feeling it now.
I am up at 3:30 in the morning. To go to a tuna auction.
I am here in Mumbai, India.
And I'm here in Tokyo, Japan for Sakura, the cherry blossoms.
It's 7:45 in the morning here in Phnom Penh, and I'm just going to try to cross the street. I'm going to try on a crosswalk.
It's 6:15 in the morning, and I think I'm one of the only people in Ta Prohm. This is Tomb Raider Temple.
Hi, I'm John Sabeau, and this is the Far East Travels Podcast. Hey there, welcome to the Far East Travels Podcast. This is John Sabeau coming to you from Da Nang, Vietnam. And in this episode, I'm going to do another roundup or wrap up of the latest details on openings and what's happening as far as, of course, openings and current COVID situations in East Asia, Southeast Asia. So first off, I want to give a shout out and a thanks to Tank and Jax from the U.S. for their lovely comment in Apple Podcasts. Great content delivered with passion and with great production value. One of my go-to travel podcasts. Thank you so much. And those positive reviews in Apple Podcasts, or what we used to call the iTunes Store, are very helpful in helping others discover the Far East Travels Podcast. So I will leave a link in the show notes. As always, just follow that link. Make sure you're signed into your account. Rate the podcast out of 5 stars and then write a review, and you'll help others discover the Far East Travels Podcast. Also, shout out to these cities listening to the Far East Travels Podcast this past week in the U.S. Norwalk, Connecticut, Atlanta, Georgia, Orange Park, Florida, Huntington Beach, California, Houston, Texas. In Canada, Burlington and Toronto, Ontario, and in Sweden, Stockholm and Gothenburg, and in Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh City. Thank you so much. So you can also support the Far East Travels Podcast by becoming a patron. Patrons get exclusive access to content not available to others, depending on the level as well. And there'll be a link in the show notes. Just follow that link and you can see all the offers to be a patron for the Far East Travels Podcast. Thanks again for your support. And so I'm going to get to a few of the updates on as far as openings go for travel for international tourists and what you're going to be expected to provide. First, I just want to tell you a little bit of a story that happened to me today here in Da Nang. Typically, anywhere in East Asia or Southeast Asia where I've lived for the last 7 or 8 years, I'm usually indoors between noon and 3. Either I'm in my place or I'm at a cafe doing some work. But unless I'm on a trip somewhere and I'm going to be outside a little bit more. I tend to be indoors just because of the heat, and the sun is, of course, at its most intense. So it's not good to be outside. So that's how I handle the afternoons here, the middays here, especially because they can be the worst for sun and being affected by the sun. So in the morning, I'll go for a walk. And I went for a walk doing a little more exploring today, and I came across a little banh mi food court that only sold vegetarian banh mi. And it was right across from a temple or a pagoda here. So if you're ever looking for vegetarian food, almost anywhere in East Asia or Southeast Asia, just find a temple and you're more than likely going to find at least one restaurant in that area that's going to be a vegetarian restaurant. So I found this cart across the street and it seemed like they just started. I'd not noticed it before. And so they were asked me just to wait a few minutes while they got set up and they brought the food out. And I think they have a little restaurant as well. But I was speaking to the lady that's the owner And she told me they had a vegetarian restaurant in Hoi An. Now, if you're not familiar with Hoi An, it is the ancient capital, or sorry, ancient town, not capital, but ancient town here, one of the most preserved ancient towns in all of Southeast Asia, one of the most beautiful towns in all of Southeast Asia, I would say. And usually it's visited by hordes of tourists. And the last time I spent any extended amount of time there was 5 years ago in 2016. I think I spent almost 2 weeks there. And it was almost impossible to go out in the evening and go to one of the restaurants that's well known in the town without a reservation. You could just not show up and expect to get served or get a table. So typically it's just, there's tourists from all over the world that seek out Hoi An when they're in Vietnam. And to be there right now would be, I mean, such a huge contrast. So I'm looking forward to actually going down there and doing some filming in the next little while, because it will be actually kind of a treat to be able to film around with not so many tourists around. But the lady was obviously explaining to me that they had to shut this restaurant down because the rent was high, and because it's in an extremely busy tourist area, it would be. And they just weren't getting enough business to sustain it. And so they had to shut it down because of COVID. And they wanted to keep their staff working and keep things going. So they ended up moving up some operations to Da Nang, where they can rely on the local population. And they had this cart there. Anyways, I had the banh mi. It was 15,000 dong or 65 cents. And it was I had it for lunch, and then I'm took a little bit of break, and now I'm here doing the podcast, and it was absolutely delicious. I mean, these banh mi are, I mean, for anybody that's, you know, outside of Vietnam, when they come to Vietnam, it's hard not to fall in love with the banh mi, because they're so delicious, no matter what you have, a vegetarian or a meat one or a fish one. Sometimes I will have the fish one, or one called the banh mi chaka natrong, which is the fish cakes inside the bread and with different things. And it can be wonderful as well for about the same price, 65 US cents. So they call these, or I've kind of dubbed them, probably somebody else has called them, the McDonald's killers, because McDonald's just has not done well in Vietnam since they started operations here. And one of the reasons why is it's really hard to compete with such a delicious sandwich so cheap when you're selling burgers. And there is no McDonald's that I am aware of. I've looked for them just out of curiosity in Da Nang. There is no McDonald's here. There's Popeyes. There's KFC. Fried chicken does well in Vietnam, but the McDonald's has just not done well with their standard menu. And this is one reason why, because of these banh mi. So let's get to what's going on in as far as openings go. And this is news that I've seen here this week, and things that I've either seen through different forms of media, and I've kind of condensed it and put it all together to share with you. So, you know, I've seen a few stories on Thailand in the media here in Southeast Asia. And it looks like they're ramping up Phuket to be open to international tourists by July 1st. So it looks like July 1st, tourism is going to start to open up in Southeast Asia for international tourists. Will you be allowed to enter? Well, it'll depend on a few things. I don't have all the answers, but it looks like Phuket is actually jumping the COVID vaccine queue line in Thailand, and they are vaccinating right now, or their goal right now is to vaccinate at least 460,000 people, which is most of the island's population. So they will create the herd immunity before July 1st so that they're prepared to receive international tourists that have already been vaccinated and will not be required to quarantine. And that will start July 1st. Now, will that be all of countries? We don't know yet. The thing is, it's mostly Western countries, it seems, that are being able to vaccinate, their general population, or at least a good portion of their general population. This is still not happening in larger areas of Asia. So if they do a soft opening with just the region, it won't be very many people at first, because not all these countries have been able to get the vaccine out to the general population yet here in either East Asia or Southeast Asia. So In 2020, there was only 6.7 million tourists visiting Thailand, which seems like a lot to maybe a smaller country. But for Thailand, it's not. And they received $14 billion approximately in revenue from those 6.7 million tourists. But in 2019, there were 40 million visitors spending approximately $80 billion. So about $66 billion. Difference in revenue. So you can see how that has affected tourism and overall GDP in Thailand and why they are so desperate to open up their borders again and doing whatever they have to do. So because Thailand or Phuket is an island, it makes it obviously a lot easier to isolate the rest of the population of Thailand so they wouldn't be affected. They don't have to have the rest of the population vaccinated yet. Now, will you be able to wander off of Phuket after that? I would think so. At least maybe you would have to stay on the island for 2 weeks before you would be allowed to wander into the rest of Thailand, even with the vaccine. But I'm sure that will be possible. And then if you're one of these people that likes to be here or in Southeast Asia, at least for, you know, months on end, then you would be able to take advantage of the extended tourist visa now available to tourists in Thailand, and you can stay up to 9 months in Thailand. So you'd be able to, you know, I would expect travel to maybe some of your other favorite places like Bangkok or Chiang Mai. So it does appear Southeast Asia will start to open to international tourists that have been vaccinated by July 1st, with Phuket being the first destination that will welcome tourists. You will no doubt obviously have to make Phuket your first port of entry into Thailand as well. So I wouldn't expect you will be able to transfer. I mean, it might be possible, but when I first seen these stories come out, it was stated that you had to enter Thailand through Phuket. You could not transfer. So that's not that difficult to do in normal circumstances in other parts of Asia. Of course, you can't really do that from Western countries. So if you're from the West, if you're coming from Western Europe or North America, then you'll have to find obviously a friendly hub city that will allow you to transit through. And some of them were, even up to a few months ago. The limited time was in some airports 8 hours, but you were allowed to do that. And from some of these major hub cities in East Asia or Southeast Asia, they did at one time have direct flights to Phuket. So I'd imagine that would be starting up again as well. So Bali is another place that is looking like they're going to be opening up. This is the latest reports. I've seen things change all the time in Indonesia, but it seems the last reports I've seen that they were going to open up to international tourists by July 1st. This was the last reports I saw were coming in at the end of March. There will be some restrictions, and it is possible, even with if you're vaccinated, you might have to still quarantine in a hotel for 5 days, but you would also have to have a COVID test as well before arrival. Even with a negative COVID test, they may still make you quarantine for 5 days. And the places that you will have to stay in are either Ubud, Senyur, or Nusa Dua, which are obviously very popular places for tourists to stay. Those will be what they call green zones. So there's no word yet on which countries are going to be part of that program. It will be limited to a few countries. So that is obviously for people from Australia. This is a huge winter destination for you. The summer here in the northern hemisphere and winter in the southern hemisphere. So typically in the northern hemisphere summer months, Bali is overflowing with Australian tourists. So that's a real important vacation destination for Australia. So I would assume that would be one of the countries that they would open up. And then just moving over quickly to Japan. Japan looks like they're even cutting back on official contingent parties. So they're going to cut those down to a minimum. And there's not going to be any international tourists allowed in to Japan for the Tokyo Olympics that are going to take place in the summer. So that's your update there. And then just another note, I saw a story. Well, there's been a couple stories out of Taiwan this last week. Of course, the absolute a terrible, tragic story of the train crash. And 50 people, at least 50 people died in this plane crash, train crash on the East Coast rail line in Taiwan. It was the Taroko Express. I've taken that train before. I've been on that line. I've been through that tunnel. And all the years that I lived in Taiwan, I never feared for my safety riding any of the trains there, whether they were the regular trains or express trains or high-speed trains. But this was seems like the worst crash in the history of rail in Taiwan. But I can say that normally it's everything runs on time and it's always been safe and I always felt safe. But a terrible story out of Taiwan this week. And then on top of that, the bubble that has started between Taiwan and Palau, the travel bubble. So let me give you a few more details on that. So this is what a travel bubble looks like. This is the first travel bubble in Asia, I guess, outside of, you know, what you would consider maybe Asia Pacific being Australia and New Zealand. But this is the sort of East Asia, Southeast Asia or South Pacific, I suppose, travel bubble. Now, if you're in Taiwan and you want to go to Palau, you've got to go to the airport, Taoyuan Airport, 5 hours before your flight. And you have to be there 5 hours before your flight because you're going to have a COVID-19 test. And you have to wait around 2 to 3 hours for the results. And then as long as you have a negative test, you'll be allowed to board the plane. Of course, if you don't, if you got a positive test, then you're going back home and you're not getting on that plane. So everything on this trip and the reports I've seen is about double the price of what it would cost normally to do a trip of the same kind to Palau from Taiwan, double the price. Everything is done within your travel group. So there's no mingling with the general population. You have to eat, drink, do all of your stuff with your travel group. You're not allowed to wander outside of that group. There's limited sites that you will see. And again, no interaction with the general public in Palau. And again, that price is double the regular price. So I don't know if this is just, you know, to cater to people that, you know, for status, they want to be able to say that they've done some international travel or they're just interested in Palau and they don't care. They just want to get off of or away from Taiwan and to a completely different place for a little while. But Taiwan is very fortunate in that it has its own outer islands. And, if you ever felt stir crazy being on the main island and you just felt like you needed to get away and feel like you're somewhere completely different, even though it is within the Republic of China, there are some wonderful places that you can go. Like the Penghu Islands are really interesting. I've been there. I've been to Jinmen. Of course, they have the beautiful Orchid Island or Lan Yu, which has a very strong indigenous culture. There's just some wonderful little islands that people can travel to feel like they've been away. And normally they don't. Taiwanese don't like to, if they go on a trip, they want to go to Thailand or some different place. They're not necessarily, they want to get away from Taiwan. They don't want to spend their time. But now they have the time to do this, so they can do this. And then, of course, probably heard this week, Australia and New Zealand officially have a reciprocal travel bubble now. Australia was open to New Zealanders coming in without quarantining. Now New Zealand is doing the same thing starting April 18th. And the share prices have gone up on their local airlines already because of it. So, that's good news for the market, I suppose. They will have green zone flights, meaning that no one will be allowed on a flight that's been outside of Australia for less than 14 days. So if you've come back into Australia, you've got to be in Australia for at least a couple of weeks before you'd be allowed to get on a plane to go to New Zealand. And apparently there's still the possibility that, you know, you could undergo COVID tests and quarantines are still possible, maybe not likely, but they want to prepare people in case something happened that they still, you know, those things still could happen. So that's it. That's your update this week from East Asia, Southeast Asia, and the South Pacific. Hey, thanks so much for listening. I do appreciate it, as always, and do appreciate the communication that I get from you as well on different platforms. And if you want to follow me, you can, of course, on Facebook and send me a message, Far East Travels or the Far East Travels podcast on Facebook, as well as Instagram, John Sabos Far East Travels. Lately, I've been doing some short little live broadcast from the beach here, and it's always nice to interact with people from the beach here in Da Nang. Also, I have a new YouTube video out on the beaches of Da Nang, and I hope you do check that out and subscribe to my YouTube channel, John Sabo, on YouTube as well. And of course, as always, I appreciate the support, the financial support for the Far East Travels podcast. There's a couple of different ways you can do that, and there'll be a couple of links in the show notes. Just check those out. And again, thanks for your support for the Far East Travels podcast. So until we travel again, I do wish you safe travels for the future. Namaste, tashi delay, and peace.